We were paddling down a section of river that was very narrow, maybe 15 feet in, from one bank to the other. And we're nowhere near civilization. There's no other teams near us. And there had to be like a 12 to 15 foot alligator. Huge, just blocking the water. And he was so big, and it was mating season is the time they tell you to be extra aware because they're on the move and they can be territorial.
Hey, welcome back to the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast, where we talk about what it takes to go the distance in running and in life. I'm your host, Eric Dieter. I'm an ultramarathon runner and a mindset coach. When trail runners get together to run a few miles, we never know where the conversation is going to go. So if you're ready, let's get started. My guest this week is Heather Hart. Heather is an exercise physiologist. She's a run coach. She's a blogger. She's active on Instagram, posts a lot of great content there. She's also a returning guest in episode 19. She came on. We talked about burnout, and she is getting started in adventure racing. Adventure racing is running mountain biking, paddling, sometimes horseback riding, sometimes rock climbing. Kind of depends on what the race director has in mind and how he wants to put the race together. So there's a variety of things you have to do. Fun episode. But before we get to talking about Heather's story, I want to thank a new sponsor, Exoskin. Exoskin is sponsoring this episode. And this summer has been extremely humid here in Kansas City where I live. And I'd be dripping after every trail run. And I knew I have this 100-mile race coming up. In fact, in just a few days from when this podcast is released. And I knew if I didn't do something, I was going to be dealing with a lot of chafing. I've had it before. You probably have too. And I've heard about how good Exoskin is. I decided I was going to give it a try. And I got, it has a 30-day money-back guarantee. I knew if it wasn't something I liked, I could send it back for a full refund within 30 days. But I tried it out. I was amazed in the middle of my run. I didn't feel that sopping wet feeling of having those wet clothes sticking to me. And it wasn't, my body temperature wasn't as hot. I was actually cooler. What I learned is that Exoskin uses this, a patented rapid dry copper material. It's actually two separate yarns. One yarn is called PTFE. Think about like Teflon. It reduces friction and it just moves easily across your skin. It reduces chafing that way. It also takes moisture and moves it away from your skin, which is why in my first run, I was amazed I wasn't feeling that sopping wet feeling. There was sweaty elsewhere on my body, but where I was wearing Exoskin, I didn't feel that wet clothing sticking to you type of thing. The other yarn that they use is copper, which reduces odor, so your clothes don't stink. If you've ever tried, like me, trying to wash your clothes and getting the smell out is really hard. Exoskin, you don't have that problem. So it's a great product. The copper is also great for overall wellness and for your skin. Exoskin makes all kinds of products, from skull caps to socks and everything in between. Their socks are amazing, regular and toe socks. They help reduce blisters. And if you're out on a training run, if you're out on the race, you've got to focus on a lot of things: your training, fuel, if you're racing, hydration, pace, and energy. That is something that you don't want to have to worry about your clothes causing you irritation and pain. Exoskin helps reduce that. So if your clothes are making you uncomfortable, that's a distraction you don't need. Exoskin has been tested in ultramarathons all over the world, all kinds of weather. And if you want to be as comfortable as possible, no matter what conditions you need to be wearing, Exoskin. Exoskin is made in 100% in the USA, and it's a veteran-owned company. I'm going to be wearing Exoskin in my Hawk 100 coming up. I'm looking forward to giving a full report with my experience in real race conditions in the next episode. Check out the full line of apparel at exoskin.us. And you can use the code ULTRAMINDSET, ULTRAMINDSET, for a 15% discount. Imagine if you were going to show up to your race and you learned that you couldn't use your GPS watch. You learned there was no trail marked. And oh yes, you had to find your own checkpoints just trekking through the woods using only a map and compass. And besides running, you'd have to mountain bike and paddle something like a canoe or a kayak. This is what adventure racing is. After talking to Heather Hart, my guest this week, I'm thinking this could be a fun challenge. I've seen it on TV, some of the big adventure races that are multi-day. But there's a lot of ones that are much shorter, much more accessible to people who might be starting out. So after listening to this episode, you might be tempted to try it as well. Maybe we can get together an ultramarathon mindset podcast adventure racing team. That could be fun. Here's my conversation with Heather Hart. I hope you enjoy it as much as I enjoyed talking with her. You are, I think I've only had a handful of people who have come back for a second episode.
Oh, yay!
and so I know the last time we talked, and I was going back through my files, and like you were at episode 19 or something. So I was just starting. And, when you start something new, you're really not very good at it. But I really enjoyed the episode, the things, because you were talking about, we were talking about that you'd been through burnout and you'd done ultramarathons and had run like back to back, I didn't actually listen to the whole episode, but I'm going by memory, but you'd run like 1 week you'd run 100 miles and then maybe, a few weeks later again, and just you ran yourself, kind of ran out of steam.
I sure did.
if you're listening to this, somebody wants to go back and listen to that, I'll make note of what it is in the show notes. But you have you've gone on, and I've been watching you. I'm watching you on Instagram and some of your adventures, and you've gotten into some really cool things. So for people who aren't going to go back and listen to the original episode, give a little bit about yourself and as who you are and your kind of ultra running history.
Sure. So I'm Heather Hart. Yeah. I am an exercise physiologist and a running coach. I've been running for, goodness, I have to always think, how old is my oldest son? He's going to be 15. So I've been running for 15 years now. Probably the last 5 years I've been focusing on ultra marathons. And what we were discussing in the last podcast was how I kind of got caught up in the, let's do all the races we possibly can.
Right. And, well, yeah. And the mindset of, ultramarathon runners tend to, we think we're tough, we can do this. And
yeah.
We can push through because we have to do that in a race.
Exactly.
And you kind of put that in your life.
Yes.
And did a little bit more than what you should have.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely, you hear it in ultra running all the time. Like your mind is what gets you to the finish line. Your mind is stronger than your body, and it is to a fault sometimes. Yes. So, I wasn't really listening to my body and I was listening to my mind, and I ended up doing too much and I crashed and burned pretty hard. It was a classic case of, not something I would ever recommend for a client, and I knew better, but I did it anyway.
Yeah, that's funny how we as coaches, we can give advice and it's like, maybe at one time we were doing, we were following our advice, but it's really easy for us to let our personal habits drift off from what we know and what we're telling other people to do. And just like, if you don't have, kind of watch yourself or have a coach, someone on the outside looking at you, it's easy to get off track.
Very easy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you have, and I think last time we talked, you had kind of recovered from that you were starting to crank up again. So what's going on in your life now? I mean,
let's see, on the ultra front, I'm currently training for my fourth 100 miler. I'm going to run, long haul 100 in Florida in January. So I'm in the very beginning stages of getting, my mileage back up for that. But, this past year, probably past 2 years, my husband has really gotten me into adventure racing. So that's what we've been training for lately.
And that's something when I saw your some of your posts about that, I was like, okay, I really wanted to talk to you about the adventure racing.
Yeah.
Well, you've been doing stand up paddleboard too. And so you're in South Carolina, if I remember.
The Myrtle Beach area. Yes.
Myrtle Beach. Okay. So I see you kayaking or not kayaking. I see you paddleboarding through, areas where alligators are there. And
oh yeah.
talk to me about adventure racing. What does that entail?
Yeah. So adventure racing is a multi-sport, But not so much like triathlon, where it's very standard. In a triathlon, you're going to swim, you're going to bike, you're going to run. An adventure race can have a multitude of disciplines. Typically, you're going to find trekking or running, mountain biking, and some kind of paddling, usually kayaking, maybe canoeing. But there can also be a number of other disciplines, depending on whatever the race director feels like making you do. I've seen, like, in some of the bigger races, like rock climbing, horseback riding, all sorts of things.
Wow.
But the main point is you're typically given coordinates in a map, and you have to plot these coordinates to find checkpoints throughout the race course. So unlike a traditional race where the course is marked, in adventure racing it's typically not marked. You kind of have to choose your own adventure to find these checkpoints without using any GPS. And sometimes, depending on the race, the race director will tell you, like, for these certain checkpoints you have to get there by foot, and maybe these ones you have to get there by bicycle. These ones you have to paddle, or sometimes you have to figure out what makes the most sense to get you there. It's typically a time limit. The one we're currently training for next is 12 hours. So, the whole idea is you get as many of those checkpoints as you can, and you get back to the finish line before the time's out. And whoever gets the most checkpoints in the least amount of time wins.
Okay. So
That's the general idea.
so if you finish early, if you're like really good, you can get all the checkpoints in and get back to the finish line before well before the time limit, or several hours before the time limit, and you'd be the winner.
Yeah, and you get the best snacks because you're waiting on everyone else. So, yep.
That's the case in any race.
Yep.
Well, and so the but so if you do if you get back like at the time limit, or you realize that you've budgeted your time, and the last one that you need to get is far enough away, you come back in, you're at say half hour before the cutoff. How is there some sort of formula for like determining, okay, you missed checkpoints, but you got in at this time? How do they, I mean,
Yeah, that's a good question
sounds like
'cause
a real complex math formula, and it's like math was not what I did when I was in school.
right, no, same here. It's a great question because rarely do people, make it back in time with all the checkpoints. So, typically there will be like a penalty. Every 15 minutes you're late, they'll take away a checkpoint. You'll lose a point or
Oh,
something like
wow.
that.
Oh, wow.
Sometimes in some races, certain checkpoints can be worth more points, so than other ones. So it's really a game of strategy, which is one of the things that appeals to me about adventure racing. In ultramarathon, it's you kind of put your head down and you go. You know what's ahead of you, and you just have to get through it. In adventure racing, you really have to think because you have to come up with your own strategy. You have to follow a map. You have to work with teammates because it is a team sport. And something like that is, a perfect example. If you're running out of time and you have a checkpoint that's maybe too far, you're not going to make it in time. You have to kind of think, is it worth it to get the penalty and still get that checkpoint, or should we just skip it altogether? So, yeah, it's pretty cool. You've got to think.
Now, and I've seen adventure racing. I mean, way back there was the Eco Challenge was one that was on TV, and so I remember Eco Challenge Borneo, and they were dealing with these leeches that could actually bite, could attach through your tennis shoe. And so it was like it was just a very, very extreme. And then there's Bear Gillis, I think, has one that was just recently on
Yes.
Amazon, I think.
I think it was on Amazon, yeah.
I think it was Amazon. And but that see those both both of those that's kind of what I know about adventure racing. It seemed to be fairly structured in that
Yes.
they started, you did the canoe or the kayak, and then you went transitioned to mountain biking and then to trekking, and there was you didn't necessarily have a set course, but they were all on the same kind of on the same path.
Right.
It wasn't like, you start in the middle and your checkpoints are all around you, and you go and it, so what you're talking about sounds different from what my concept of adventure racing was.
Yeah, it can be. So those are called expedition adventure races, and they're
Okay.
typically multi-day. And when you're talking about that skill level, typically on each team, even on the smaller ones we do, usually on each team you assign one person who's the navigator, who's going to be kind of really in charge of making the decisions of what path to take. And in those expedition races, sometimes there is more of a set course, but sometimes all the navigators just can see on the map, this is the path of least resistance, or this path makes the most sense, which is why you'll kind of see them all going in the same direction.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I thought that might be the case, but it seemed to be more of a point to point. What you were describing is kind of like the things are scattered out, or the race director could arrange them in any exactly. fashion, but they wouldn't necessarily have to be point to point. It could be a loop, or several out and backs that you do.
Absolutely. And it's, you know, similar to ultra marathon running. Sometimes you have a looped course. Sometimes you have a point to point. Sometimes you have an out and back. But the cool thing about adventure racing is that you just often don't know. You know, beforehand, you know, here's the equipment you need to bring. Here's the time limit you can expect. And that's pretty much it. You're not given the coordinates or the map until either the night before the race or the morning of the race. So you don't even know where you're going. Until then, you might not know how many checkpoints you're looking for until race morning. The race directors like to throw those kind of surprises at you, which makes it really fun and exciting.
So you said no GPS. So can
no GPS. That
no GPS watches either to track where you're
technically,
at?
Technically, no, you're not supposed to. I do know a lot of people, and I have myself, like I'll press start and then tuck it away in my backpack. So I'm not using it, you know, to navigate, but we all like to see our numbers on Strava at the end of the day. But no, you're not supposed to use any sort of GPS, any sort of technology. It's all map and compass. In some cases, you can't even use a pedometer. You know, you have to learn how to count your paces if you're trying to figure out your distances. Bike computers are occasionally allowed, but only, again, just the very basic, like, pedometer style or, you know, the magnetic ones, not the electronic ones. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
So I'm thinking about timing. Do you have having a watch? Well, and you have GPS on your phone, too, so you can't, like, take your phone along.
Right. Yeah.
So do you like a camera to take pictures?
Yeah, so you know me, being a blogger and social media, I do bring my phone. I turn it on GPS mode. You know, we're doing, at the level we're racing right now, we're not doing any of these big, like, championships or anything like that. So it's really honor system. Mm-hmm. I do like to take pictures and document our adventures. So, but if ever I was asked to not pull out my phone, I'd obviously not do it. But as far as watches go, you know, it makes me think of the Barkley, where Laz gives you, you know, your little, Casio watch.
Casio.
Yep, you can get your $5 watch from like Walmart or something, and all you need to know is the time.
Right. Yeah, and that's because that's kind of primarily what I use my watch for. The GPS tracking is not necessarily to find my way. I think I've used that feature once, and it's like, if you have the GPS directional finding on, it doesn't actually track your, it doesn't track your run. And so, the one I'm using now, Garmin, you know, I'm using a Coros, but, you know, the Garmin, you know, it might be able to do that, but I was on a trip. I was going hiking with my wife, and I was like, oh, you know, I can program the trail into my watch, which was kind of good because the trail is like ended. I kept looking and says, we're supposed to be on the trail, and looked around, but you know, realized that we were really at the end, but you know, it is like, it didn't show up on Strava. So
oh, wow.
Technically we were never there, you know?
Yeah. Right. Doesn't count.
So yeah, that's interesting that, I hadn't thought about it because I just am familiar with how my watch works.
Mm-hmm.
So, you do a 12 hour race. What kind of equipment do you have to use? I mean, do you have to provide your own, you know, kayak, canoe, bicycles?
Yeah, it varies race to race. So for example, this one we're doing next, I believe they're using canoes and they're providing them. So we'll bring our own mountain bikes. And that's pretty typical because, you know, people get mountain bike fits are it's very much to getting your shoe fit, you know. So we'll bring our own mountain bikes and we'll bring, obviously, our own our own hydration packs, food, whatever other required gear, but they'll provide the canoes for this one. We've done races in the past where we had to bring our own boats. So we do own a couple, well, a fleet. That was our
fleet.
Everyone had their kind of COVID, you know, random purchases, and ours ended up being a lot of boats. So we've spent a lot of time on the water the past 18 months, but yeah, so that is, like I mentioned earlier, one thing the race director will tell you beforehand is what required gear you have to bring.
Okay. So I'm thinking you may be doing some stuff through the, you know, through brambles and brushes. What kind of clothing do you wear?
Typically, it's going to be very similar to what I would wear for an ultra, you know, depending on the time of year. But that said, like if it's colder and I'm wearing pants, it's going to be a pair of running leggings that I am not going to be heartbroken over if they get torn. You know, you tend to wear your mountain biking gloves all the time, you know, even when you're hiking, because you are off course, you are off trail. You might be climbing things or grabbing, you know, pricker bushes or things like that. And our first adventure race we did together, my husband and I, he was making fun of me because when we left the mountain bike section for a short running section, I ran with my helmet on. I just forgot to take it off. So, you know, I'm running through the woods with a helmet on and people are looking at me funny, but, but you know, it's going to be very typical to what you're wearing for an ultra. But again, it's going to vary based on location of the race and time of year.
So did they offer, I mean, I'm thinking you're out there for 12 hours and, you know, you have hydration pack and food. Do they have like aid stations along the way and you have to find them the same way that you find the checkpoints?
So the races I've done so far, there's not an aid station per se, but there is a transition area. So you know where the transition area is, and it'll typically be where you're going to either, you know, get off your bike and start a run or something like that, or maybe like find your boats where they've been parked. And you know that at that transition area, typically you can leave like a drop box or a drop bag, like you would in an ultra. Right. So that's where we'll store extra food, extra water. But in my experience so far, you have to provide everything for yourself. No water on the course. You know, if you run out of water, you better have a life straw or something to refill. Yeah. So I'm sure there's probably some like smaller, you know, beginner courses where maybe they do provide stuff, but that just hasn't been my experience yet.
Well, yeah. And I guess kind of the spirit of the sport is self-sufficiency.
Exactly.
So you pack your own fireball.
Yeah. For the finish. Yes.
For the finish. Yeah. Well, there are some ultras I've been on, they provide fireball at the aid station.
Yep. So. Yep. We ran, Upstate Ultras Country Mile 48 hour this past April, and every time you came through, it was like a less than 3 mile course, and you had to run through like a tiny little, I want to call it a garage, it was on a farm. And anyway, at one point during the night I ran through and it was just lined with fireball bottles. Like, this has become a trend, I guess.
Well, and I never knew, I mean, I'm not a big drinker, and I never knew about fireball until I started trail running. And then
it's like, oh yeah, it's so, I don't know where this all started from, but yeah, it's pretty trendy right now.
yeah and it's just, and it's a thing. And I think there are other, you know, I think mountain bikers and there are other, you know, discipline or sports, endurance sports, that's fireball is kind of a thing as well. But
yeah
ultra runners, that's what I was familiar with, and that's kind of like everywhere.
It's true. I've yet to take a mid-race fireball shot yet, so I don't know if I could stomach it.
You know, I did it on my very first ultra marathon.
Really?
Yeah, and on my, it was on awesome. I think I had almost 8 miles to go, and they said, "You want a fireball shot?" And I'd never had it before. Never had. I mean, and wasn't a whiskey drinker then, and so, well, yeah, I'll try it, and it was, I did okay. You know, I didn't fall over.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that's good. Yeah. It'll put a little pep in your step.
Yeah. But I do know, I mean, I run with people who you know, the 100 mile races, there'll be several shots of fireball along the way.
Whew. Yeah. And kudos to their stomachs. Yeah. Mine couldn't do it.
Well, I did a beer in my 100. My wife gave me a beer because I was having trouble keeping calories down. Well, I mean, I was having trouble eating calories.
And, yeah.
like my stomach was fine. And so she says, here, you know, this is like liquid bread. Mm-hmm. And it was fine, except I got this mental fuzziness. It was like 10:30 at night when I took it. And so I got this mental fuzziness, kind of like when you're driving and you've been driving for a long time. And it's like, oh, okay, that was the beer. That was.
Yep. Yeah.
Maybe not do that again in the middle of
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. So what adventure races do you have? I mean, is this something that you're going to continue doing as a discipline?
So that's a great question. And of course, as always, there's a backstory to this. So my husband, he did a handful of adventure races probably a decade ago when he used to live out on the West Coast long before I met him. And when we met, you know, he'd always been talking about them, always kind of like gently pushing me towards them. And, and I was, I've got other things to do. You know, for a while I was big into obstacle course racing and then took up the ultra marathoning. And, he bought me a mountain bike a few years ago and it took me a few years to actually warm up to wanting to use it. And we found an adventure race here in South Carolina back in 2019. And so he signed us up for it. We did it. And sure enough, I fell in love with it. It only took him about 8 years to get me to do it. So, you know, this is definitely something that I see us doing more and more of. And just like ultra runners, you know, you start with a trail half marathon, a trail marathon, your 50K, your 50 miler, you want to keep going and see what's next. Mm-hmm. I have that same thing with the adventure racing. So, you know, we've done a couple 12 hours. I'm really looking forward to hopefully doing a 24 hour soon. Then I would like to get into maybe a 2 or 3 day and then maybe one day, one of those big expedition races. Mm-hmm. Logistically and financially, those are huge. So that's further down the road. But yeah, I do see this being something that I do regularly. And I found it's a great way to bring this full circle to kind of help prevent that burnout from the ultra marathons that I love so much.
You're right. Going back to, I guess, maybe a technicality, the navigation. I mean, I was going to ask that when we were talking about phones and GPS, and it's like, you know, cause the navigating by map, is how long did that take to get, or do you just like go in and it's like, oh, we need a good navigator and that person's the one we follow.
I bet that I'm sure that probably does happen with some teams. My husband taught me and it took me maybe like a couple practice runs and it just clicked. Like navigating makes sense to me. So I am the navigator on our team. We have a team of three. It's myself, my husband, and our friend and one of our coaches on our heart strength and endurance, Brian. So it's three of us right now. And it just clicked for me. I think some people have better navigational skills naturally than others. Mm-hmm. There's still a lot of things that I'm learning. My biggest weakness with navigating is that I tend to the opposite of overthink. I assume I know what I'm looking at and I could be, and I'm wrong, you know? Uh-huh. So, or in a race, I think like, oh, well, if I was the race director, I'd put a checkpoint here, and I kind of get on that train of thought and I'm completely wrong. So sometimes I have to take a step back and get back to the basics. But it's a pretty cool thing. You have to learn, you know, how to, in some races actually plot the checkpoint. Some races, they'll give you a map with the checkpoints already on the map. So you follow that. But others, you have to take those coordinates, UTM coordinates, and plot them. So if you're wrong, if you're off by, you know, a couple numbers, or which on a map could be anywhere from, you know, a few hundred feet to a half a mile, you could be sending yourself in the completely wrong direction. So you have to learn how to do that. Reading a topography map, you know, what do all those squiggly lines mean? What do all these little symbols mean? And then learning how to like shoot a bearing and follow a compass. And it's a never ending process for me. I have a pile of books that my husband got me that he's kind of pushing me to try and read to learn more and more. But it's, again, like I mentioned, it's cool to have this, you know, whole different thinking side of a sport that you can't kind of let your guard down and just go. You have to pay attention all the time.
Well, and I would suppose you get a compass bearing and it's a straight line. Mm-hmm. And then you're going to end up having to deviate from that.
Exactly.
How does that work?
Yeah.
Because I know a lot of people, I mean, they try doing that and end up lost in the wilderness.
Right.
I mean, you hear about hikers that it's like they haven't seen them for a while and like, oh, not so much now, not so much now with GPS, but I mean,
right.
when we had maps, that was a common thing to get lost. Mm-hmm.
And that's a very real possibility. And this is not something I've dealt with in a race yet, but I was talking about this just the other day with my husband, and he was saying how some teams will use strategies where, you know, you'll look at your compass and you'll be following, you know, where you're supposed to be going. And if you come across an obstacle, what you can do is send a teammate around it, you know, and tell them, like, that's where I need you to be. And then you can go around the obstacle as well, meet up with them, and then kind of keep almost paper clipping back and forth to make sure you're staying in that straight line and not deviating from it, because that certainly can take you well off course.
Yeah. So is that the only way, or do you have other strategies?
You know, I'm sure there's other strategies. Yeah, it's just not something I've had to do yet. And I'm such a newbie at this. So I'm sure if any experienced adventure racers are listening, they're probably like, oh, she doesn't know about this or that. that's kind of been our method so far. And also you can use, you know, things you see in the distance. You know, like if you see a specific tree, be like, okay, we're going to remember that. I need to keep heading in that direction if I've got to go around this puddle or rock or whatever, kind of keeping that in your compass line. So I'm sure there's more strategies too.
Well, and there is a sport that is similar to this, similar to that aspect of adventure racing. Mm-hmm. Is called orienteering, if I remember.
Yeah, absolutely.
So seen some orienteering clubs. It's not from what I remember, it's not a timed event. Well, maybe it is. I've only looked at it from the outside, so maybe orienteering is a timed event, but it's it's that same idea. So
I think it is timed, but it's more in the same time as like you would time a 5K. You know, like there's an order you're supposed to go in. It's so much bigger out in Europe than over here, but I have seen some competitions and they are fast. It's so impressive how they can read a map while, you know, running a 6-7 minute mile down a trail and going from one checkpoint to the next checkpoint to the next checkpoint. That's a pretty cool thing too, but that's typically just on foot.
Okay. Yes. I knew it was just on foot orienteering. Oh yeah. And I hadn't thought about that, because you have to keep your map dry. And if you're in the water and then carry it on a bicycle. So
we have cool equipment for that. You know, we've got map cases that are waterproof. I have a board that's actually attached to my handlebars on my bicycle so that I can read the map while I'm riding, which is a talent I'm working on. So that you can constantly keep track of where you're going while you're still moving and not have to constantly stop.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you talked about, you know, reading a map while you're running in orienteering, the orienteering. I mean, my daughter told me about this orienteering club that was near where I live. Mm-hmm. And what I read seemed a little more laid back than I didn't think any of them were going to be running.
And some people do just walk. Mm-hmm.
It seemed more like a hiking club. It's like they're hiking rather, you know, and they just weren't following the trails. In fact, I take that back. Some of the orienteering events were on trails. And so you could choose to follow the trails if you wanted to.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, last 2 weeks ago, we went up to Crowder's Mountain State Park in North Carolina. So it was about a 5-hour drive from us. And there's an orienteering club up there that worked with the state park to put in a permanent orienteering course. So you can go online and print out the map and print out the clues and just kind of go out there on your own and find these checkpoints. So that's what we did. There was 23 of them, and some were, you know, easy. They were on trails, and as long as you kind of followed the map, you found them. Others, you had to go bushwhacking, and we definitely got turned around quite a few times, but it was fun. And that was just purely on foot. Yeah.
Yeah, and that would be a good practice for
keeping yourself. Absolutely.
So do you have a good sense of, when you're out, a good sense of kind of general direction?
Usually.
Just in general?
Yeah, and I've always had that ever since I was young. You know, that's I've kind of always generally known where I was, or for example, like here where we live near the coast, you can put me anywhere and I can almost always tell you, like, okay, the ocean's that way. Mm-hmm. know, I know which way north is. So, and I don't know if that's just some crazy genetic sense I was born with or what, but
This is just a kind of personal question. When you land at a when you fly somewhere and land, are you disoriented?
Not usually.
Really?
Yeah, but you know, I'm certain that there's been times I've landed and not really thought about it, so I'm not sure.
Yeah, I used to get that. I would fly, and just I was like, when you're on vacation for a week, I was totally disoriented about which. I mean, I could find my way around, but usually wherever I go, if I drive somewhere, I always know kind of that's north, that's and knew the general directions, and not sometimes it's kind of unsettling not knowing which is north
Oh, I can see that for sure.
when I was, and especially like in Hawaii because it's surrounded by water. You know, you go to this
Oh, there
island
you
surrounded
go.
by water. And yeah, it's just a little bit in the back of my mind felt weird, and I just
Yeah.
wondered if that was something that happened to you. But
No, but the only thing similar, you know, just to tell you a quick funny story that's ever happened to me like that is the first time I flew to Colorado, I had never been to Colorado, and in my mind, I pictured this very like green, forested, big mountains, maybe like New England where I grew up, but bigger. So when we landed in Denver and it was just like a desert, and it was, you know, just very barren, I was convinced we were in the wrong place. I was like, are you sure that this is, we got on the right plane and this is Colorado? Yeah, that was probably the only time I've been like, where, this doesn't feel right. Like, where am I right now?
Well, and I mean, yeah, it is way out in the desert. They built, and I have no idea. I mean, I'm sure they had reasons, but because the Denver airport used to be in Denver. The airplanes would, when you were driving on I-70, the runway went over top of it. And so you'd be driving down the interstate and you see this airplane cross the road a mile ahead. And yeah, it was kind of a weird, but, yeah, they moved it like 40 miles outside of town. And
Yeah,
it's
it
a
feels
long
like it's in the
drive.
middle of nowhere.
It is in the middle of nowhere. But yeah, that I could see how you do that. So how did you like Colorado?
Oh, it was beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. I couldn't breathe, you know, East
Oh yeah.
Coaster, flatland here. But it was beautiful. We did the 6-day Trans Rockies run. This was a few years back, but it was amazing. So we got to go from Buena Vista to Beaver Creek and kind of went through, you know, Vail and Red Rock. I don't remember the exact towns, but yeah, it was absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, and if I remember, I have a friend who just did it this year. It was like on her bucket list to do, and I think she turned 50 recently, and it was
Oh,
like,
awesome.
okay, this is something I want to do, and saw her Instagram stuff, and I was like, I think that's going to be that I think is on my bucket list
It
of
should be on
races. So.
every runner's bucket list. It was absolutely an incredible experience. I would recommend it to anyone, hands down. And I'd also recommend that if anyone's ever unsure, should I do the 3-day or should I do the 6-day, go all in and do the 6-day. You won't want to leave on day number three.
Yeah, and if I remember it, it's about the equivalent of a marathon each day, about 25 miles.
Yeah, some days are shorter. It ends up being about 120 miles, I believe. There were a few 14-mile days, I think two of them, but those were the big climbing days. Like the day number two, you go up over Hope Pass in Leadville. So that was only 14 miles, but you know, you go straight up and then straight back down. So it's still a long day. And then maybe day five, I think might have been a shorter day as well. And then the others are about 20 to 25 miles.
Yeah, and as a ultra runner, you go like, oh, in 6 days, 100 and some miles, it should be a piece of cake. But yeah, you're talking mountains,
Yeah,
mountains
and
and
then, you know,
lack of
day
rest
after
in
day. Yeah, your legs start to hurt by day number three.
the gym. Oh, well, that's good. So what is next for you? What do you have on your bucket list of things that you want to
Oh,
races you want
bucket
to do?
list. So this is, you know, after doing the ultras for a few years, I finally decided to bite the bullet and start my Western States lottery ticket quest. You know, I will never be earning a golden ticket, so got to try to get in through the lottery. And Long Haul 100 in January is a ticket, a Western States lottery ticket race. So I'd love to get to Western States one day. That's a bucket list for sure, probably for most ultra runners listening. I definitely want to do a 2 to 3 day adventure race. We're looking at potentially Sea to Sea, which goes from the Gulf Coast of Florida to the Atlantic coast, or maybe it's the Atlantic to the Gulf, I don't know, but it goes from one side to the other. I would like to do that. And while not necessarily a bucket list, this October I have a triathlon, an off-road triathlon. I haven't really been talking about it much because it's a struggle for me. Swimming is not my sport, but it's just a sprint off-road. You know, you've got your swim, your mountain bike, and a trail run race. And I've done a triathlon before, but that was maybe 10 years ago. So this seems to be an every decade thing. Got to just, you know, check
maybe
it
they'll
off.
Get better, right?
Yeah. But yeah, you know, the big thing right now is I'm just really enjoying trying different things. I love running, and I will always, you know, as long as my body will allow me, I will always be an ultra runner, and I'll continue to pursue these distances. But I'm really enjoying seeing the other ways, you know, I can push my body and explore the outdoors and kind of try these crazy extreme events.
Yeah. Well, and long haul is a fairly flat course, if I remember it. I've seen, saw somebody who'd run that last year, and it's like, that looked like it was just, well, most of Florida's flat from what
I understand. And the terrain is almost identical to what I train on here in Myrtle Beach, you know, very like sandy, rooty, tropical, swampy. So I figured it would be a great one to start with for, you know, the Western States qualifiers because of what I have available to me to train on.
Well, and speaking of swamps, this is because of, you know, I you know, I'm from Kansas, and you know, when I get off, if I'm on the trail, you know, I can see the snakes. Well, they kind of look like sticks, sticks sometimes. Yeah. I can see the snakes, but and this is something I had a deathly. I was terrified of snakes as a child, and so I've kind of carried that over. It's like, you know, tromping around through the woods, there's stuff out there you don't see. What do you do? Just kind of hope for the best?
Or So I'm you know, born and raised New Englander. I'm from Vermont. We have maybe garter snakes. That's it. And you rarely would see them. It's just too cold up there. So when I first moved down here to South Carolina and started trail running, it was, you know, you see a snake almost every time you go run, and it took me a while to get used to that. Mm-hmm. I wasn't necessarily afraid of snakes, but it still startles you. You don't expect to see them. Now it's just, you know, you want to keep your eyes open because we do have a couple of venomous snakes around, a couple of species, and they won't come after you or anything, but again, you don't want to step on one. So, you know, I think you just kind of, like any environment, you get used to being aware of your surroundings. Snakes will usually hear you coming, and they'll usually get out of the way. Alligators are another thing we have to worry about.
And I've seen some of your pictures, and you're out there cruising around, and there's alligators in the water. I'm thinking.
Yeah. That's one that was harder for me to, and it's still harder for me to get used to because that's so foreign, you know, coming from New England, an alligator. But I mean, we have them right here in our neighborhood. I live on an old golf course that's no longer in service, but we have the pond still. So there are alligators that walk through our neighborhood. But when you're out there, you just, again, you need to be aware and you need to be respectful of their space and that it's their home. But they're not out to get you. They're not going to chase you down. If anything, they're probably just as afraid of you as you are of them. So, you know, give them their space when you see them. The only time I've truly been afraid, and I wrote about this in my blog post for the Palmetto Swamp Fox Adventure Race we did back in March, we were paddling down a section of river that was very narrow, maybe 15 feet in, you know, from one bank to the other. And we're nowhere near civilization. There's no other teams near us. And there had to be like a 12 to 15 foot alligator, huge, just blocking the water. And
stretched across. Like,
oh yeah. He was so big, and it was mating season is the time they tell you to be extra aware because they're on the move and they can be territorial. So we were like, my husband and I are in a tandem kayak. Our teammate Brian's in a kayak right next to us. And all three of us stop. We're like, what do we do here? Do we just wait it out? And usually they'll swim away. Well, my husband took his paddle and he hit the side of the boat to try to scare the alligator away. The alligator turned and started swimming towards us.
So the alligator took that as a challenge.
So I that's what I thought too. I'm like, stop, you know, maybe he's being territorial. And we're like, what do we do? So we decided as a team, on the count of three, when I say go, and I was in charge of counting, we're just going to paddle as fast as we can.
Toward
And
the
that's what
alligator.
We did towards the
The
alligator,
alligator was
because
coming towards you, and you paddled toward that. Okay.
Yes. So he was kind of swimming, you know, on an angle towards us, and he had turned just a little. And that's, you know, we said as soon as he starts to turn a little to face the bank again, we're going to go. And we did. And as we were going by him, he went under. He created a wake. He was so big. He created a wake that kind of like rocked our boat a little bit. It was terrifying, but that's the end of the story. It was fine. You know, they, again, like I said, they don't really want anything to do with you either. So,
yeah. And I think I have heard, you know, they get territorial and I think the mothers will protect their nests, if I remember.
They will.
And
yes.
So, they'll really come after you. And what is it? They said they can run 30 miles an hour or something like
that.
Yeah,
they can run fast for a very short time,
for a short time.
Never,
and in
never
a straight
doubt
line.
That.
Yeah.
And that, exactly.
Yeah. That's, yeah. I don't know why. Why do I know survival skills from about alligators? Because I live in Kansas and never encounter them. But things that I read, I remember, and they said, yeah, if an alligator's coming after you, run at a 90-degree angle because they can't turn very fast. And so,
yeah, I've heard that. I've heard zigzag. But again, you hear all these things, and I don't know. A, if they're true, or B, if I'll even remember that. If an alligator is actually running at me,
well, see, I
who
thought
knows?
If the alligator's coming at me and I'm running at a 90-degree angle, if he's far enough away, he has time to turn. You know?
Right.
Yeah. And if you're zigzagging and the alligator's running in a straight line, you're actually losing ground. So.
That's true. That's very true.
But yeah, I don't know that I don't know that I'll ever need to use that, but I, you know, who knows? I may come down to Florida, you know, go down to Florida and run, you know, the long haul or something like that. But,
yeah.
So I might, you never know when the alligator avoidance skills need to come into. And the adventure racing sounds like a lot of fun.
It is.
And yeah, it's something how can people get, you know, how can people find them? Is there like a website, a clearinghouse to know, you know, if people wanted to get started in adventure racing, you had recently started, how do you get started if you want to pursue this?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, being 2021, we've got the internet, which is super helpful. I have not personally, and again, I'm new to this, so I could be wrong. I have not personally found anything that's kind of the equivalent of like ultra sign up for adventure racing. Okay. So my recommendation is that I would go online, see if there's an orienteering club near you, because they would probably have an idea of local races. Or, you know, just search the internet to see if there's something near you. Reach out to people you know who do like mountain biking or kayaking, or you'd be surprised how many people have been like, oh yeah, I've done one of those before.
Mm-hmm.
They are not nearly as common as like running races are. But they're out there, and I would recommend finding a shorter race to start with, like a 3-hour to a 6-hour race.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of gives you a taste of all the different disciplines and of the navigating, which is a huge part of the sport, but doesn't overwhelm you with the logistics of having to be out there for 10 to 12 hours. And since it's a team sport, and let me back up. It's not always a team sport. There are solo categories. People do
okay.
go out there and do it by themselves. So if you want to try it and nobody's on board, you can probably still do it by yourself. But it is a big team sport as well, either in 2, 3, or usually 4-person teams. See if you can find somebody who's done one before. And, you know, they might kind of help show you the ropes. And then last but not least, Facebook. There's a fantastic group. What is it called? Adventure Racing Discussion Group, I think. And it's a public group on Facebook, and they're super helpful. Everybody in there is so wonderful. I think it's a small enough sport, and it's been around for so long that people are really, there's no gatekeeping. Let's say it that way. There's nobody who's like, this is my sport and we don't want beginners. It's quite the opposite. People
okay.
are so helpful and kind of pointing you in the right direction and helping you understand the gear and the logistics and finding races or even finding teammates.
Okay. So yeah, you could go onto that Facebook group and maybe connect with some people.
Absolutely.
Do racer, like if there is a race, is there a way that you could like, meet a group, you know, like form your own team. I mean, do race directors offer that kind of feedback to people who want to get into it?
Yeah, I've seen some facilitate that. Usually I see it again in like a Facebook event. Like for example, the Palmetto Swamp Fox race that we do, there will be a public event on Facebook as well for that race, and
Okay.
people will post in there, "Hey, team of three looking for one more member, or team of two looking to see if another team of two wants to join up," or things like that. And they'll usually say, "You know, our skill level, we just want to finish, or we've never done this before." Or maybe you'll have somebody who's like, "You know, we're a competitive team and our navigator got hurt. Is anybody, you know, does somebody want to join? And our goal is to try to win," or something like that.
Right,
So,
right.
but yeah, that's, you know, long live the internet. It definitely has its negatives, but connecting people in the endurance world, it's priceless for that.
Yes. And also, I mean, we see that in for asking for pacers or crew.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because oftentimes the race will have its own Facebook group, and you can go there and say, yeah, I've paced somebody that way. Went to somebody, I was on the group and just found, and she asked for pacers, and it was kind of funny. She had three pacers, and none of us knew each other. I mean, well, she knew one of them, but the other two of us, we didn't know each other at all. So
And now you're lifelong friends
now,
because
yeah,
you,
now it's like,
yeah, you did this great thing together.
in fact, the other pacer is pacing me for my 100 in a couple of weeks.
That's awesome.
So yeah,
That's so cool.
I got acquainted with her, and like, okay, yeah, you've got the kind of tenacity that I'm going to probably need for the last 25 miles.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you need the right person for that job for sure.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, Heather, one of the things I didn't ask you about your work, and I want to give you a little bit of chance. So, exercise physiologist as well as a as well as a runner. So, kind of, what's the distinction between the two between that and a running coach, and how
Absolutely.
can you help people, and then
Sure.
also how can they get a hold of you?
Oh yeah, that's always good too. So the certified exercise physiologist is basically just my credentials. I did go to college for exercise science, and obtain my bachelor's degree, and the exercise physiology certification is kind of going to be your next step beyond just being a basic personal trainer, much more clinical information and things like that. So, I will be honest in that I don't use much of the clinical stuff in what I do currently, as a running coach because I just don't necessarily need to utilize this stuff as much. I used to, you know, I really enjoyed my time like working in an exercise science lab, but currently what I do is virtual run coaching. My husband and I own Heart Strength and Endurance Coaching. We're a team of, let's see, right now we got one, two, three, four, six coaches. And we do work with athletes of all levels, you know, all experiences in running, some triathlon and some obstacle course racing. But mainly we focus on ultra marathoners, and it's typically going to be people who are transitioning from, I hate to say shorter because a marathon is in no way short, but from, you know, more traditional distances, we'll call it that, to ultra marathons. And we also specialize in just helping people balance their real life with ultra training, as we all know, because it can be overwhelming. So that's what I do, and I also do blog full time, although that has been on the back burner with COVID and in homeschooling and whatnot. But you can read my blog at relentlessforwardcommotion.com, and on there I share things, you know, everything from my personal training and race reports to a lot of educational information and posts, you know, both with the exercise science nitty-gritty stuff. Like if you want to learn about cardiac drift, I'm your gal. Like I've got posts on that to things like, you know, things I never expected from ultra marathons, you know, like the gross stuff no one told me and all that kind of stuff. So,
And you've been doing it for quite a while, so there's a lot in the archives, so people
Yeah,
can hear
long
it first.
time. I feel like a grandma in the blogging world. Yeah, I've been blogging since 2009, so
Wow,
it's
okay.
been a while.
So yeah, that would be a great resource then. So yeah, for not only for any kind of running, I guess.
Yes. Yeah. You've got everything from, you know, how to my version of the couch to 5K, all the way up to training plans for your first 100 miler and everything in between.
Okay. Yeah. Great. Great. And then you're also on Instagram. That's I mean, you post a lot of your adventures on Instagram.
I try to balance the, you know, educational posts with my own racing and running and training shenanigans.
Yeah, and you've got some
lately, I know saw you had a series on mindset that was really, I mean, really, really good.
Thank you.
Yeah, as I was like, wow, I wish I'd have thought of that.
Yeah.
It's things that I know, but the way that you put it together, it was like, I mean, I knew all this, you know, most of what you were saying is like, oh yeah, I'm familiar with this, but you put it together in a way it was like, wow, that's just amazing. So I was really grateful for that. So yeah, follow. And how do they get you on Instagram?
On Instagram, I'm Relentless Forward Commotion. I don't know. In retrospect, all these years later, I'm like, I picked the world's longest, URL or handle. It's a mouthful, but Relentless Forward Commotion is how you can find me.
Well, I had the same thing with the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast. Yeah. every time I type that out, I was like, okay, why did I make this so long?
Right.
So I just created a new email account, and I shortened it to Ultra Mindset Podcast.
There you go.
The marathon was one that's just like my fingers got all twisted. Mm-hmm. When I tried to do that. So.
Yep.
But yeah, so cool. Well, thank you a lot, Heather. I appreciate it.
Of course.
And I'll put all the information for your connections in the show notes. And
okay, great.
And so thanks. I appreciate it. And good luck with all of your adventure racing and your 100-mile coming up, the long haul.
Thank you so much.
Look forward to seeing your pictures.
Good luck to you. What 100 are you running?
I'm doing the Hawk 100.
Oh, nice.
It's,
okay.
Lawrence, Kansas. Uh-huh. It's just to the west of Kansas City. 2 years ago, that was my first attempt at 100. And it's a tough course, a lot of rocks and very, very, very technical. I was doing well. And even we had heavy, heavy thunderstorms in the middle of the night. And I did fine with that. But the rain soaked in for my final 25-mile loop. And the trails were just slick. And you couldn't get traction.
You can't run. Yeah.
And so I was able to keep moving. I mean, like we fell a lot and slipped and slid, mm-hmm. and slid, but I wasn't able to move fast enough to make the cutoff. So,
oh yeah.
84 miles. I got 84 miles and had to stop.
You can't be mad about that though. That's still an impressive distance.
Well, I could do it. It's just like, well, mm-hmm. That's the appeal of 100.
Yeah.
It's not a guaranteed finish. I mean, even if you're fully prepared, there are so many things that can go wrong. So mm-hmm. my running friends talked me into doing one in Oklahoma 6 weeks later, and it was all gravel roads, and it's like I would never want to do that again, but I finished.
So, there you go. You had to get that like confidence booster, especially when you spend all that time training and you feel like, I got so close.
Well, that's what they told me. This is, you're already ready. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah. I said, no, I haven't run on roads this year at all. It's all been trails. So in hindsight, now I've run more on roads this year than I have ever. I've probably got almost equal distance running roads, and I moved to barefoot. So I'm running barefoot.
Oh, wow.
And so on concrete, I run full barefoot because I can see, and avoid everything. But trails, I run in sandals.
Okay.
But yeah, it's been a good fit. So
that's awesome.
I've got 100 miles coming up in sandals. It'll be my first time in that footwear. So
I only know one other person who's done that. So that I am impressed. my friend Karen Jackson. I don't know if you know her. She's a East Coast runner. She does like Vol State and all those things in sandals. She does not believe in shoes. So yes.
Well, if you strengthen your feet, mm-hmm. It feels good. It really does.
I believe it.
There's a transition. And so, and as you were talking about adventure racing, I was thinking brambles, and running through the brush and sandals. I think I could still do it.
Yeah. It would be the biking that would make me nervous, just because me being clumsy, I would manage to somehow like hit my toes on something, or I don't know. But I do have a few pairs of running sandals that I like to do like 3 miles or less on the trail. And I love the way it feels. It's just not something I've, really experimented going any further with. But yeah, I think it's so great for your feet. Yeah.
Well, I did a podcast with a guy who's now living in Jim Lane. He's an expat in Costa Rica.
Uh-huh.
And he read Born to Run before he started running. And he was kind of like, why would you run for fun? Who just,
right.
He was a firefighter. He read Born to Run, and his first runs were barefoot. He never was a shoe runner at all. Well, I take that back. His first race, he raced in shoes because he felt self-conscious. Everyone else is wearing shoes.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was just a couple of episodes back.
That's cool. No transition time for him.
He was running on concrete. I mean, he started out running.
That's amazing.
On concrete, so
wow.
And now he runs in Costa Rica barefoot. So
wow, that's awesome.
So, hey, thank you again for the time. I appreciate that.
You're so welcome.
It's been great to get to talk with you again. I'll be watching your adventures on Instagram for sure.
Yes, and I'll be doing the same. Keep up those funny videos. They crack me up. And good luck in your race.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I think I'm ready. I mean, it's like the saying, undertrained is better than overtrained.
100%.
Yeah. I've got enough of a base. I'm confident. I'm going to take it easy. And, you know, my goal is to finish. So.
Yeah. And I feel, you know, it's my belief that in the 100-mile distance, experience is a huge component, and you've done it. You know what it takes to get to 100 miles. So you've got that going.
I know what kind of thoughts are going to run through my head after 8 miles, you know. I've had those conversations with myself before.
Yes. You'll do great, I'm sure.
Hey, thanks. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Have a great rest of your day.
Thanks, you too. Bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Hey, thanks for listening to this episode of the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast. And at the end of the episode, most people just hit stop. But since you're still here listening, I would like to see if you're game to try something new. I would like to hear your stories. I've set up ultramindsetpodcast.run. We'll take you directly to the show notes. And in with the show notes is a section called Comments, Questions, and Stories. This is a place where you can go to a site. It's a link that will take you to a site where you can leave comments, questions, and stories, which is why the name. So the first topic, and what I'd like to do is I would like to put the best stories at the end of the podcast. So after I do the closing announcements like this, there would be a story or two. And so we'll be on different topics. The first topic, I talked about it last show, I would like to hear your poop stories. We've all got them. I've got a couple of poop stories. Where is the weirdest place you've had to poop? And it happens to all of us. You're out running and you've got, there's not a bathroom close and you've got to make do. So I'd like to hear your most creative, your best, where's the weirdest place you've had to poop? Go to ultramindsetpodcast.run. And find comments, questions, and stories. Click on the link there and just tell your story. You do have a chance to kind of edit. If you don't like it you don't like the way it comes out the first time, you can re-record. So there's some functionality there so you're not stuck like you do with voicemail when you can't really go back and change if you said something stupid. Which on voicemail, I usually say something stupid. So I wish there was a re-record for most voicemail. Sometimes there are, but most of the time I never get that far. So the best stories I want to have at the end of the show. And so I won't ramble on too much more. Ultramindsetpodcast.run. Show notes are there. A reminder, if you do like the show, share it with your friends. That is the best compliment you can give. I would appreciate it very much. It also helps the show grow if we get more listeners. The Hawk 100 is in a few days. I'm going to be running there. If you are a listener to this show and are at the Hawk 100 in Lawrence, Kansas, September 11th, 2021, I'm going to be there. If you see me and recognize me, I'd love to meet you in person. Can't say if I've, depending on how long I've been on the course, try to catch me at the beginning because I'll probably be a little more coherent then. So also talk to me about coaching and talk to me about coaching. I'm a mindset coach, not just for runners. So if you're not an ultramarathon runner, I help you get unstuck. I help people find their epic thing. Message me here at ultramindsetpodcast.run. You can use the same message system that we use for the stories and questions and comments. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.